For a long time, it wielded huge influence over Sudan, but now Egypt is nervous as its neighbor is embroiled in conflict. Cairo is siding with one of the rival parties. How much of a gamble is it taking? And what are the possible implications? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Nick Clark. So, Sudan is in turmoil with no end in sight to the fighting between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Neighbouring nations already dealing with an influx of refugees are worried that the violence too will spread beyond its borders. At an emergency meeting of the Arab League, Egypt's representative called for an immediate ceasefire, highlighting the close ties his country has with Sudan. But that relationship means that Egypt is supporting one side over the other. A decision with far-reaching implications. We'll go to our guests in just a moment, but first this report from Nihad El Abidi.
The Rapid Support Forces says this video shows Egyptian soldiers who surrendered at Mero Air Base in northern Sudan. It was released just hours after the conflict broke out between the paramilitary group and Sudanese army mid-April. The RSF says Egyptian military intelligence officers were among those detained. But Cairo says the troops had been conducting joint training exercises with their Sudanese counterparts. Some say the RSF perceives Egypt's support for General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan as a threat. Egypt reportedly sent jet fighters just before the fighting started and additional pilots soon after to support al-Burhan. He and Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi have grown closer in recent years in terms of military cooperation, Red Sea security and trade. Sisi has been working to improve ties with Sudan's army since former President Omar al-Bashir was removed from power in a coup in 2019. Earlier this month, the two armies held naval drills at Port Sudan on the Red Sea. Both sides opposed the construction of Ethiopia's mega dam on the Nile River. Egypt fears the Grand Renaissance Dam will significantly reduce its share of the Nile's water and affect its agriculture and electricity production, while Ethiopia maintains the dam is essential for its economic development. Sudan's unfolding humanitarian crisis is a concern for Egypt. The journey from Khartoum is long, more than 1,000 kilometers by road, and dangerous. People describe having to go through dozens of checkpoints set up by fighters from both sides. And once they reach the border, the way to enter Egypt sometimes lasts several days. The African Union and the Arab League have called for a diplomatic solution, fearing the fighting may spread beyond Sudan's borders. But to date, neither the army nor the rapid support forces has committed to taking part in proposed peace talks. Nihad El Abidi for Inside Story.
All right, let's now go to our guests. Joining me from Khartoum is Sudanese journalist Mohamed Al-Amin Ahmed. In Cairo, in Egypt, is Sarah Kira, who's founder and director of the European North African Centre for Research. And over in the United States, in Washington, D.C., is Halil Al-Anani, who is Associate Professor of Political Science at the Doha Institute for Graduate Studies. A warm welcome to all of you. If I could start with you in Khartoum, Mohamed. Because you're there, it's important for us to know how things are with things ramping up again in the past 24 hours. How is security? How are food supplies? How frightening is it?
The situation is as it is. It's going deteriorating even. Ceasefire is not holding anymore. The two sides are still fighting in different areas of Khartoum. They are exchanging somehow the control of the strategic places. The army is still controlling the airport and the headquarters and its headquarters, but the RSF is still also shelling the same places. The people are fleeing Khartoum not just because of the humanitarian situation and the and the bombs that fallen on the houses of the civilians because of the random shelling and random air striking.
Okay.
But also there is a new factor of looting the civilians in the streets and looting them even inside their houses in a place like Omdurman. So the situation is very risky for the people, and the people use or take the opportunity of the few hours of relax of the fighting to flee outside Khartoum, actually, or to go.
Okay, Mohammed, it certainly doesn't sound as if there's any kind of peace coming anytime soon. Let me just ask you one more question before we go to the other guests. Is there a fear amongst the population in the capital that this could get worse, that neighbouring countries might become embroiled in this, that this could spread across the region?
Yes, actually, the people who were in the streets, actually, in Khartoum, calling for civilian rule, and the resistance committees, the opposition parties, all the pro-democracy protesters are believing so, that this war is because of the regional and international intervention, and they are looking very suspicious to the roles of Egypt and the Gulf countries as well, including also Saudi Arabia and UAE. So they are believing that the two sides have been supported. The two sides, I mean, the SAF and RSF, they got support from these countries. So and like Egypt is standing behind. They believe that there are a lot of signs and indications that Egypt is supporting the army and the national army and want to copy paste the experience of Egypt of 2013 into Sudan. And UAE is also supporting the RSF as because of other indications, especially, you know, they are still fighting with the UAE in Yemen, and they are sharing a lot of investments and economic interests. So those people, they are believing so, and they are looking very suspicious to these three countries.
Okay, let's throw it across to Cairo, to Sarah Kura. How is it perceived there? How serious is it that the external actors like Egypt and like the UAE are supporting opposing sides in this situation?
Well, to speak about the regional factors or the regional actors interested in Sudan, that list that goes on, it's a list that never ends. Of course, Egypt has an interest in the stability and prosperity of Sudan, and I'll mention later why. But another Arab states have different interests in Sudan. And speaking of Egypt being behind the army or not, it's very important, especially in this time, to elaborate that Egypt is not taking sides of one over the other. Egypt has paid a visit last January 2023 through General Abbas Kamel, who's the head of the intelligence of Egypt, to Burhan, General Burhan, to urge him to take things further and transition the power to civilians, because that's what Sudanese people want. That's why the demonstrations went on and went on back in the days. And the crisis of Sudan takes a decade. It started a decade ago. And all along that last decade, Egypt was trying to mediate along with the Juba peace agreements, the Cairo workshop, and the Arab League initiative. So we've been trying. It's kind of Egypt now lost Sudan. That's the point we can tackle now. Because if we look, we have been, okay, as my colleague mentioned, that we have been supporting al-Burhan, okay, but that's not to like transit the experiment or anything. That's for the stability and prosperity of Sudan, because we see the consequence today.
Okay, let's throw that point. Let's throw that point. We'll come back to you in a second, Sarah. But let's throw that point across to Halil Alanani. I'm curious to know what you think about that. Egypt not taking sides one way or the other. Over the last decade, Egypt has been trying to mediate in the situation in Sudan. What do you make of that, Halil?
I think this is unfortunately untrue. Egypt, since the beginning of the transition, 2019, adopted a deeply flawed, short-sighted policy in Sudan, driven by two contradictory objectives. The first one is Egypt, along other regional allies such as UAE, Saudi Arabia, Israel, worked hardly in order to prevent the establishment of a civilian, let alone democratic government in Sudan over the last 4 years. On the other hand, Egypt feared that Sudan might turn into a failed state that might have geostrategic, political, and economic and humanitarian crisis, as we see right now, that unimaginable and unmanageable at the same time. Unfortunately, the main goal for Egypt was to establish a strong military rule, as is the case in Egypt, in order or under the belief that this might prevent Sudan from sliding into a civil war or sliding into a chaotic situation. Unfortunately, this was a like self-destructive policy or a prophecy that came true. Unfortunately, if we see the Egyptians' behavior over the last 4 years, on one hand, they supported the military component within the Transitional Sovereign Council. On the other hand, they supported also the coup that was staged by Al-Burhan and Hamid at that time, 2021. Then they tried to sow discord between civilian forces. The visits that was paid by Abbas Kamel last January was not, in fact, to support the framework agreement that was agreed on in December 5th, but in order to create a parallel process that might create divisions among civilians. That's why the main faction, the Forces of Freedom and Change, FFC, the main component, the Central Council, rejected the process and rejected the Egyptian initiative. The other faction, the Democratic Bloc, agreed and joined the what's called the Cairo's Workshop. So unfortunately, Egypt made this crisis to happen along other allies, unfortunately. And now they're paying the price.
Halil, I'm going to throw that back to... Come back to you in a second. I'm just going to throw that back to Sarah before we go back to Mohammed. So, Sarah, what's your reaction to that?
It's very hard to blame any neighboring countries or even any other regional or superpower actor in Sudan when the two forces are fighting over resources and power. And when the two forces are increasing themselves, if Egypt is supporting the National Army of Sudan, because as a state, as Egypt, as a very important axis of its foreign policy, they will never deal with militias. And this is very evident. They will deal only with the National Army, not to transmit any experiments. But that's like the official party who we can deal with. Egypt will never deal with paramilitary because that's not in its concept of foreign policy. That's what I was trying to say. But mediation, I think Sudan now is very hard for one actor in the region to mediate in this. I don't think that even the Arab League can come into it. Has to be the US and IGAD and the AU.
Sorry, we're going to come on to mediation. We're going to come on to mediation and resolution in a minute. Mohammed, if I can come to you, what's your view from within Sudan of Egypt's role in all of this, both prior to the conflict and now?
Yes, actually. You know, the policies of Egypt towards Sudan since like 50 years ago has never changed. So the policies of Egypt has never changed. So, you know, the memories of the Sudanese have a lot of memories of the Egyptian intervention in the domestic policies of Sudan. Actually, we have this like in 1970, 1971, and in the uprising of the 1985 and in other incidents. So the members of the Sudanese, they have a lot of impressions of how Egypt is intervening in the politics of Sudan. So now the two militaries, the Sudanese and Egyptian militaries, they are actually sharing a lot of interests regarding the economy, regarding the politics, regarding the regional interests. So we have, for example, the Egyptian and Sudanese army are sharing mining investments, livestock investments, agricultural investments. So and we know in these two countries, this has been used actually for power struggling between the army and its other rivals, whether it's civilians or other army components like in Sudan. So the two armies have shared a lot of interest in order to stay in power, in order to struggle with the power struggling that's in the two countries. And we know that these two sides were, I mean, SAF and RSF were allied together for a long time against the civilians. And during that time, there were a lot of countries in the region have interest in keeping the situation in Sudan in the hands of these two sides. And now when that is when this conflict happened and when this conflict of interest reached its highest point, the regional players also have to keep their interests on and intervene in Sudan. We have also a lot of indications. For example, we understand that Egypt, for example, have a military maneuver in Marawi Air Force with the Sudanese military, but they stay for really long than a year of the officers that have been arrested in Marawi is also sending a lot of questions of what is going on between the two sides. So, and we didn't hear a real execution from Egypt or from the Sudanese military about this. All these things, given the Sudanese people, I mean, in the history and since 2019 and up to now, and after the beginning of this war, give the Sudanese a lot of indications that there is something happening. There is something happening between these two countries. And another question is that why the two countries didn't declare that there is more than 100 Egyptian officers or pilots that come in Marawi.
Jump in there. Sorry, let me throw that back to you. If you briefly could respond to that, and then I'm going to move it on to Halil.
So it's a lot of accusations there and a lot of, analysis. Of course, I have all due respect to what the Sudanese civilians want, but no one wants war. No one wants war, even Egypt. If we want something, me personally, as an Egyptian citizen, is the stability of Sudan. Stability, and not only stability and prosperity. Why? Because any negative consequence, now the people who are feeling actually Egypt didn't do anything until now. We only evacuated our people from Sudan and other foreigners as well. No one has taken any step forward now because Sudan has slided into civil war. And blaming neighboring countries and other actors, I don't think it's the right exit of the crisis. The right exit of the crisis is to push onto the integration of a real national army. That's to start with. Now Sudan is falling into being categorized in international law as a failed state. If there is no army controlling the borders, that's the importance of any army. If there is no army controlling the borders and setting peace in even in its own places, there will be no Sudan. And then the political
I'm
going
to have to jump in there, sorry, because there's lots of ground to cover. We've just only got about 10 minutes left, so we need to keep our answers brief, if you would. Halil, you can respond to that. And also just down to the nub of this conversation and the potential for this to spiral outside of Sudan and what your sense is about that.
I think it's very likely to happen. Sudan is sliding into a failed state, that there is no strong government in control, which means that this might affect other countries. We already have other conflicts in countries like Chad, Libya, Central Africa. So this is very likely to happen if there is no agreement in the future, the foreseeable future. So we might witness another failed state that would have a spillover in the entire area. Sudan has at least 7 countries, its neighbors, or 8 at least, that have also some sort of conflicts, from southern Sudan or South Sudan to Ethiopia to Central Africa to Chad. But let me just respond very quickly to some of the claims that I have, I just listened to right now. I mean, first of all, we need to break this down into some points. The first one, to be realistic here, most conflicts now in the region have multi-layers and different levels, internal, regional, and international. All actors are playing there. From their perspective, this is very legitimate to have a role in these countries. But to speak and to say that Egypt doesn't deal with militia, this is against the reality. Actually, President Sisi himself met with Hamiti 3 years ago in March 2020. At the same time, Egypt is supporting another militia or militia in Libya. They are supporting actually a war criminal, a warlord like Haftar in eastern Libya. Also, if you look at the Egyptian behavior over the last, 4 years, from Egyptian perspective, or from at least Egypt's perspective, this is very legitimate in order to, first of all, to prevent a democratic government. This is for Egypt Sisi, a very existential threat that might have an impact in Egypt, that which is a very authoritarian regime, as we know. Second, I mean, by many reports, and I think in the beginning of this episode that was mentioned that Egypt sent at least 12 fighting jets to Al Burhan over the last four or, you know, 3 weeks right now. Also, they sent pilots there. So they are very involved in this conflict. And to come and say that there is no role, and to speak of mediation, no, mediation doesn't mean to take part in that. Unfortunately, as I said in the beginning, this is a very contradictory, self-destructive policy that led to what we're seeing right now in Sudan.
All right. Sorry. The fact is that the region is, as we've been talking and discussing here, that the region is immersed in tensions. And this will be a very, very big problem, I mean, not just for Sudan, but for Egypt as well, if this spirals out of control. And at the moment, Egypt is stable, but it's economically in deep trouble. It's going to cause a huge amount of difficulties for Egypt, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Well, if we talk about the threats that this crisis might cause to Egypt, they are a lot. We have our borders open, of course, for our brothers and sisters from Sudan, but especially in this time where we are facing very hard economic crisis and it's felt by the people, okay? So when we receive more people into the country, that causes more demand and, of course, more prices up. And that's ABC economy. And that's what we're going to face now. So the first country that will bear all the negative consequence of whatever crisis is going in the south is Egypt, for sharing the borders, and plus that we are economically unstable now. Plus, later to be mentioned as well, I'm sure you have a question about that, Ethiopia. Of course, and Egypt is very, very alarmed from that. As colleague mentioned as well, we would be, yes, interested in a government that goes as an ally to Egypt here. Of course, that's who wouldn't say that? What country wouldn't want a friendly neighboring country, okay? So who rules Sudan is one alarm, one big alarm to Egypt. The borders is another alarm. And the economic status is a third alarm, as well as the exits on the Red Sea. So geopolitically speaking, economically speaking, and from a security perspective, Egypt is very alarmed.
Right. Halil, Sarah just mentioned the relationship with Ethiopia. And there's, of course, tensions in the whole region over the Grand Renaissance Dam in Ethiopia. What does a destabilized Sudan do to Egypt's negotiating position, and indeed Sudan's negotiating position with Ethiopia?
I think it will have a huge impact on Egypt's position when it comes to the GERD, or the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, because Egypt was counting on having a strong government in Sudan that might side with it, that might accept to the Egyptian perspective on that. But unfortunately, with the current situation in Sudan, it's very difficult to count on Sudan. At the same time, I mean, from a very realistic perspective for Egypt to have that government, they think that a government led by Al-Burhan might be a friendly and can support the Egyptian position when it comes to this. But now, as we see right now, this conflict is taking place. It's very difficult for Egypt to push forward in order to bring a binding agreement with Ethiopia on that regard. So I think Egypt is the main loser of the current conflict. Unfortunately, Egypt, as I said before, contributed to this, and it's like self-shooting, unfortunately.
Sarah, it's true to say that a prolonged conflict would throw both Sudan and Egypt's water and food security into uncertainty, wouldn't it?
Yes, of course. Food and water security is one of the first alarms to Egypt in the Sudan crisis. Reading some foresight reports in Egypt out of think tanks and so on, it says that it goes to the extent that Egypt is scared that they would sell us the water later on, because we believe that the upcoming war will be on water resources, and we don't want that in Africa. And Egypt would be left alone in that file. If Sudan is incorporated somehow with the point of view of Ethiopia, that would be Egypt standing alone for its fight on water resources. And the Nile River covers only, well, that's a huge amount, 93% of our needs. But still, we're going into water poverty, or we already entered water poverty in 2017. And with all the prices up, and we have a problem with the food security because of the Russian aggression on Ukraine. So again, this is like another crisis that we didn't need.
I'm going to stop you there because we're literally down to our last minute, and I just want to end on Halil. Halil, the simple question, which it isn't at all, where is resolution coming from?
I think this is a very difficult question. This is $1 million question, Nick. But I think without having some sort of consensus among internal as well as regional players, it's very difficult to speak about a solution to this crisis. This crisis has been in the making over the last 4 years. All regional parties have contributed to this. And this is the dilemma. Those parties that should resolve this are part of the problem. So the question is, to what extent these parties, regional, international, and local, might give concessions in order to end this kind of conflict that would affect the entire region.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you indeed to our guests, Mohamed Al-Amin Ahmed, Sara Kera, and Halil Al-Anani. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again at any time by just visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nick Clark, and the whole team here, it's goodbye for now.